How old?
Turned 18 a week ago.
Hell of a birthday present. Pretty.
Yeah. Especially for a guy.
Oh, say can you see in the blinkless electron gun eye of the mainstream media mirage that what we hail are the hallucinations of authority and progress and righteousness, whose sweet and stern voices have captivated and conditioned millions of human creatures, stimulated them in passive acceptance of technological disruption and destruction of our environments, of our histories, of the possibilities of alternative ways of being, whose seven stripes are broken swastikas, whose 50 stars are black holes sucking 200 million atomized existences into the daily routine of the human herd of hamsters, rolling the great wheels of the death machine, squeaking at the shocks and nibbling the cheese, and reciting and discussing and delighting in their mutually shared programming history, in their lives, in their cancers, their TV shows, their deaths, their jobs, their ignorance, their endless, pointless, foreign creeping, their glorious glide nosedive into their paycheck's pleasures, into an ecstatic emptiness, a glowing incinerator, a parking lot full of businessmen, conspiring and colluding on the big dream, the big lie, the big nauseating, screaming, sweating nightmare of business America, media America, corporate America, consumer America, fascist America.
I am Katrina Rose. I'm an attorney, and I'm a transgender legal historian. I'm also someone who actually cares about whether or not transsexual and transgender rights continue to exist in 2006 and beyond. As such, I'd much rather be a trans flake than a trans fake. Yes, welcome to I'd Rather Be a Trans Flake Than a Trans Fake on the Trans FM radio network and elsewhere. Hosted by Katrina Rose. Brought to you this week by one of my students. Well, I should say unofficially by one of my students, but in a way, what I'm about to read helped me get up this morning. That and a couple of Diet Cokes. For those who don't know, in addition to these intermittent podcasts and other writing-type thingies, law review articles and other things, I also teach a class on transgender history. It's a freshman, sophomore level undergrad class at the University of Iowa, and it's not specifically trans history in the sense that it's you. If you look at the course schedules for Iowa, you're not going to see Trans History 101. Although effectively, that's what I teach. It's actually a type of course where the individual instructors get to choose which particular element of a larger topic they want to deal with. In my case, it's gender stuff. A number of other graduate instructors go down other paths. Not surprisingly, I go with the trans history, and I focus a lot on the legal history aspect of it too, bearing in mind that, you know, these are undergrads, not all exclusively freshmen and sophomores. I get freshmen, sophomores, juniors, and seniors, and I actually offhand don't know the level of the student who wrote what I'm about to read, but mostly freshmen and sophomores, and it's a good mix of queer kids, sexual libertine kids, whether, you know, queer or straight, and farm kids who may or may not have ever heard any T word before in their lives. It's a good mix of stuff. And I've been doing this for about 2 years now, and I'm always pleased at the level of acceptance. Even among folks who are still kind of uncomfortable, the way I present the material as history, things that have happened, a lot of which happened right here in Iowa, or rather, I should say, right over in Iowa. As I'm speaking right now, I'm actually over in Illinois, but you get the idea. And even if they're not ready to go out and become, you know, mega trans activists and go join with the Transsexual Menace next time they protest against the Human Rights Campaign, they nevertheless come away realizing that what you see on Jerry Springer ain't it. Even the people who end up dropping the class, because just the way the course is set up, and the way the entire course schedule, not my course, but the whole course schedule for the university is set up, it is certainly possible to end up in my class not knowing what it's about. You'll know it's gender something, but you wouldn't know. It's possible to not know until you get in there that it's about trans history, although you observant students could. There are ways to find out fairly easy, but not necessarily. It's not necessarily indicative of any incompetence if by chance you were to accidentally end up in my class not knowing it was specifically about trans history. And a couple of people have. The very first time I taught it, I was kind of nervous about what the general reaction would be with a lot of the farm kids coming in. I handed out my syllabus. One guy took one look at it, put it down, got up, and walked out. Very respectfully, he didn't, you know, say, "What the fuck is this?" He didn't do anything like that. In fact, by the time class was over, he had come back with a drop slip, and he was very, very, he was very nice, very apologetic, saying, you know, "Hey, I hope I didn't disturb anything, but, you know, I took a look at the syllabus, and this just was not the class that I was wanting to take. I hope you're not offended or anything." I said, "Hey, you know, not a problem." And it opened up a spot for someone else in the class. Every semester I've taught it, it has reached maximum level. In fact, invariably, I usually have to go over the prescribed maximum level, usually by one or two. And this is something that kind of surprised me. There was really, really a whole lot of interest among the student populace at Iowa about this. I knew there'd be some. I know there's a decent size LGBT student group, and you know, it's not like they were all one grade level and they graduated and everybody went away and there was no group left. So I'm sure there's a few coming in every year. I just wasn't aware of just how much interest there would be. I get emails from people, you know, over the summer, over the winter break. You know, they see the course description online and they see that the course is already closed for it's reached the maximum amount of students. You know, they're begging me to let them in. That by itself has been really gratifying. And not just, you know, on a personal level, because, you know, someone wanting to take the class, just based on its description, you know, has no idea what kind of a teacher I am or really what all I deal with. I mean, it's the subject that's attracting them. And that by itself is majorly encouraging. And even more encouraging, and this is on a personal level, what I'm going to read is something that one of my students this semester, fall 2006, wrote on her final exam after she finished writing her essay. And on some levels, one could say, well, she's just trying to suck up. No, good student, Had some extra time. I framed the final to where, you know, no, that would not need the entire time. So most everybody had a few extra minutes to doodle or whatever they wanted to do. And here's what this person wrote. I can't give out the person's name. Privacy issues, even if there weren't federal, you know, legal privacy issues, you know, I haven't talked to her and asked, and, you know, she might not want, even if she might ordinarily not mind, she might, may or may not want her name on this particular podcast. I get a little bit rough sometimes, but this is what she had to say. And for anybody out there thinking, oh, you're just making this up. No. Thanks for being a great teacher and opening my eyes to outside views. I feel that I'm a lot more accepting and understanding of people who decide to change gender. I remember the first day of class thinking it was odd for people wanting to change their sex, but now I have a better understanding, and now I think I am a partial gay trans activist. I'll be excited when the courts allow gay and trans marriages. Good luck with teaching. You know, the class isn't designed to, you know, necessarily coerce anybody to go out and become an activist, you know, or even to coerce any particular point of view. I'm very, very mindful, number one, that there are simply different views out there, even within the pro-trans point of view. And I'm also very mindful of radical right-wing religionist Christianist oids who, you know, demand that their view, they say they're demanding it to be heard, but of course they want it to dominate. But occasionally they frame it in a way in which they actually do have a point. Some schools, colleges, have, in some limited instances, kind of gone overboard and actually quashed some legitimate free speech issues. And I'm very on top of that, I have been in classes, in college, law school, and now grad school, working toward a PhD in history. Actually, hasn't been the case here in the history program. It was more so as an undergrad, happened occasionally, and happened once in law school, where there was a very obvious bias, and I probably wouldn't be complaining about it if it was a bias, you know, toward a view that I agreed with, but it was kind of obnoxious when it was the other way around. Not that it actually affected my grade. I don't think it did. But it was still just kind of obnoxious. And I do my utmost not to let that happen in my class. Granted, I haven't had a situation yet where a right-wing religionist Christianist, you know, decides to counter everything, every point of view in class with that point of view. It'll be kind of interesting if that happens, but I do my absolute best to let everybody express any view they might have regarding some of the material I deal with. And part of trans history is dealing with the problems transgendered people have had with gay rights groups. And there are a number of either, you know, queer kids or queer supportive kids, you know, they come in not knowing about that. And whether or not they leave class knowing exactly or, you know, accepting my take on history as far as how certain groups have destroyed opportunities for transgender people and are, you know, pretty much still discriminating against us, they at least see the information that's out there and they see the entire breadth of history. There is room for interpretation on some of it. Some of it, not. I mean, for example, you know, sometimes can occasionally get a little bit dicey politically when you start talking about party affiliations, and in particular instances in history. I mean, a good portion of the class. I mean, we deal with the stuff for maybe a week or so. Involves the history of trans rights in Minnesota, which hopefully, you know, people know. You know, Minnesota was the first state to pass a statewide trans-inclusive gay rights law. But there's a lot more to it than that. And there's a very, very rich history that led up to it. For those who've ever looked at, you know, the precise wording of that law, it's a trans-inclusive definition of sexual orientation, and you know, it was passed in 1993. They didn't just come up with that language then. It had been around for a while, and there was a very, very interesting history about how that came into being. And as far as, you know, when the language was first developed, which, you know, members of which party were pro-trans and members of which party weren't. It was back in 1975. I've talked about this occasionally. You know, there was this interesting party inversion where it was the Democrats pro-gay, but they were very, very anti-trans inclusive. It fell to a Republican to introduce language that would have made the gay rights bill that year trans inclusive. All of it ultimately failed. But trying to explain to a group of students, you know, who weren't, the vast majority of whom weren't born at that point. Occasionally I get, you know, a student, you know, who, you know, a little bit older, in their 30s maybe. But, you know, 18, 19, 20-year-olds, I mean, you know, they, I'm getting to the point where I've got some students who might not actually have any, you know, vivid memories of 1993, much less 75. But, you know, that in explaining how politics was working in Minnesota at that point, how the legislature had an overwhelming Democratic majority in 1975, like well over 100 of the 134 House seats were Democrat, and that almost necessitates going off into a little bit of non-trans history. Well, you know, what influenced the 1974 congressional, you know, and state elections? Well, you know, what was the big event from 74? Watergate. You know, it's not just trans history. There's a lot of other things that influence other things, that influence other things, that influence other things, that eventually spill over into the specific subject I'm dealing with. So, I've navigated through that history, other chunks of trans history, interactions between trans activists and gay rights activists, and other chunks of trans-related stuff from over 100 years ago and beyond and on back. I've been doing that, again, for about 2 years now, and I've been pleasantly surprised at the reactions of my students. And you know, this isn't the first time anybody's ever, you know, dropped me a note or anything. Occasionally one of my former students will, you know, be in the history department area and drop a note by my office saying, hey, you know, just wanted to say hi, enjoyed your course back whenever. This is probably the best note anybody's ever left me on a final. And it really, really made my day. Really, really made my semester. It was a bit of a stressful semester, which kind of leads me into some basically the rest of the show. If you're keeping score on the show numbers, when last we met, it was episode number 56, and the election was coming up. It's episode 57 now, and we're well beyond the election, and well into December. Needless to say, a shitload of stuff has happened since then. The Democrats did take the U.S. House. Even the Senate, sort of, kind of dependent on Stephen Colbert's favorite Republican, Democrat, now independent, whatever you want to call him, Joe Lieberman. So technically, Democrat majorities in both houses in Congress. But of course, that doesn't necessarily mean what a lot of people would like it to mean in terms of things like INDA, da-da-dun, even a trans-inclusive INDA, da-da-dun. You know, what was the message prior to the election? Well, the rumblings were it was going to be trans-inclusive. Well, I've got to the point where I don't even bother putting posts out on email lists saying, I told you so, but now the backsliding has begun. It's people are trying to back off and say, well, it might not actually happen. Yeah. That's all been happening. And just, you know, timing and everything, when last I did this, did an episode, again, this is an advantage of not having to do something for a live time slot on Trans FM. I can, you know, sometimes do a number of these in one day, dealing with a lot of stuff, and then take a little bit of a break. A little bit longer of a break than I'd expected. Hell of a lot of shit happened, obviously, again, the Congress. And when last I did one of these, you know, the Mark Foley thing, the ball had gotten rolling pretty good, was kind of petering out a little bit. And then, of course, Ted Haggard came along. Ay, 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 ay. You know, if there's any conclusive proof out there that the entire neo-Puritan bullshit is perhaps the most perverted philosophy imaginable. I mean, how much is it going to take for people who are in some ways, you know, kind of marginally conservative and may have just some kind of personal, you know, kind of uncomfortableness with non-heterosexual sex, which, you know, there's 300 million people in this country, you know, billions in the world. However much we want to, you know, may think that, you know, everybody could, you know, ultimately be, you know, totally sexual libertine. You know, people are going to have different levels of discomfort with various things. Under the best circumstances, they're going to be folks who are heterosexual, you know, and may not be bigots, but just, you know, kind of have a wee bit of discomfort. That's, you know, okay. All right. They're going to be those folks in the world. Those types of folks, you know, are the ones being used by these radical right-wing religionist Christianists. How long is it going to take for, you know, kind of the heterosexual types to realize that they doth protest too much? Look at these people. You know, they're not the most masculine men in the world. You know, look at the He-Man Republican types. Governor Arnold. Now, you know, I don't live in California. I don't have to deal with him. know people who do. They have, you know, major issues, some major issues with him. Maybe he can't be trusted on this, but, you know, one thing that seems to be fairly consistent with him, you know, he did veto a gay marriage bill, but, you know, he doesn't have this ridiculous, psychotic fear of gay stuff. You know, and let's face it, you know, a guy's guy, Arnold. Maybe a little bit too much facial plastic surgery. Doesn't exactly look, you know, quite as good as maybe he did a few years back. And maybe he had a little bit too much tucking, but still definitely a guy's guy. He doesn't have problems with this shit. Ted Haggard. You know, how many people could not have looked at that guy and thought something was up, even if they didn't know? And a lot of these other people, things that, you know, stuff hasn't come out yet about. But if there was one, you know, one human being who is going to be in charge of gender conformity, making sure that children grow up to be, you know, the stereotypical genders that these psychos want people to be. James Dobson? Come on! These people aren't role models for anybody, for anything. How long is it going to take for Americans, particularly middle-of-the-road and marginally conservative folks? How many people listening kind of grew up in marginally to even somewhat majorly conservative households and communities? You know, what were the thoughts of real men regarding these wussy people who set themselves up as arbiters of all that is good? Yeah, they get dragged into church, either by family members or because of the fear their employer might find out that they're not going to church. But you hear the men talking among themselves. Real men. And I realize that's a stereotypical term in and of itself, but you know the type I'm referring to. Car repair people. Ditch diggers. Coal miners. People who really work for a living instead of sucking money from people selling mythology. Okay. The thoughts of the real He-Man types. Not the fake He-Man types. Just real people, real male people. Think back. What were their thoughts about these non-masculine types forcing rules on people? Alright? They didn't really think much of them. You're probably not going to find the He-Man thinking it out this way. They probably have better things to do. Like working at real jobs and blowing off steam in the evening by getting drunk. Probably not going to sit around and analyze it like this. But it's those non-masculine people claiming to be arbiters of good, arbiters of what's male and what's female. Those people who have the most to hide. There's a reason that they doth protest too much. And what happens when sicknesses like this are allowed to grow James Dobson, Ted Haggard. And look at all of the people claiming to be arbiters of all of what's good, wholesome, and the arbiters of what is legitimately masculine, legitimately feminine, legitimate roles for men, legitimate roles for women. Think about some of these people. William Bennett? Yeah, probably not exactly, probably not somebody hiding a gay past. And he is occasionally honest when somebody asks him real directly about the story of him actually having a blind date with Janis Joplin when he was younger. That you know, I'd heard rumors about that, and apparently was true. Yeah, probably not hiding non-heterosexual stuff, but you know, we know what his gambling Jones was. You know, has he actually gotten shed of that? You know, back during the Reagan administration, what was he secretary of? Education, I think. But even you know, within that, you know, dealing, you know, kind of deals with upbringing issues. He had to be told that it might not be a good idea for someone in his position to be known as a chain smoker. He had to be told to quit smoking. And just, you know, up, down, and sideways, all these conservative oids. George W. Bush. Come on. Dick Cheney. On down the line. When are people going to wise up? Yeah. A decent turnover in Congress. Not the best, but decent. But still, I don't think enough people really understand the dynamic with people like Ted Haggard, who still isn't willing to admit he's gay. Last I heard, he's still deceiving himself into believing that he can go through some sort of, I don't even know what the term they're calling it is, rejuvenation, reconstruction, who knows what the hell all. Yeah, same way John Polk did. Time for a little music, and then do a little bit of political stuff. And we'll go from there.
Woke up this morning, turned on my TV set. There in living color was something I can't forget. This man was preaching at me, yeah, laying on a charm, asking me for 20 with 10,000 on his arm. He wore designer clothing and a big smile on his face, selling me salvation while they sang Amazing Grace. Asking me for money when he had all the signs of wealth. Almost wrote a check out, yeah, but then I asked myself, would he wear a pinky ring? Would he drive a fancy car? Would his wife wear furs and diamonds? Would his dressing room have a star? If he came back tomorrow, there's something I'd like to know.
Can you tell me?
Would Jesus wear a bonnet on his television show? Would would Jesus be political if he came back to Earth? Have his second home in Palm Springs, yeah, but try to hide his worth. Take money from those poor folks when he comes back again, and admit he's talked to all those preachers who say they've been a-talking to him. Lord have mercy. Just ask yourself, would he wear a pinky ring? Would he drive a fancy car? Would his wife wear first diamond? Would his dressing room have a star? If he came back to Bible, that's something I'd like to know. Could you tell me, would Jesus wear a Rolex? Would Jesus wear a Rolex? Would Jesus wear a Rolex? On his television show.
He used to rob, steal, and gamble, and on the side he'd beg, so he mopped up. I told him he shouldn't do it, and Camel told me he knew it, so he started begging with a bucket instead of a cup. He's in the jailhouse now.
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 Well, Camel fluffed his dove when he wore a tuxedo to the country club. He's in the jailhouse now.
He's in the jailhouse now.
Yoda boy. Oh, Yoda. I met his old gal Sadie. She said, have you seen Bill lately? I said, I don't believe that he's about. She went down to the jail. She went down to take him his mail. Then she whispered, Sheriff, please don't let him out. He's in the jailhouse now.
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 While Campbell's put away, Sadie's with the sheriff every day. He's in the jailhouse now.
He's in the jailhouse now.
I remember the last election. The prohibitionists were in action. They was trying to elect themselves a president. Bill Campbell and John Austin walked from New Orleans to Boston, and they've got a bottle in every settlement. They're in the jailhouse now.
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 They were down at the railroad track, stealing a train to haul it back. They're in the jailhouse now.
They're in the jailhouse now.
We condemn the Foley affair categorically, and we also believe that what Mr. Clinton did was one of the most embarrassing and wicked things ever done by a president in power.
Speaking of people who should be in the jailhouse now, if for no other reason, for comparing Clinton's blowjob to every other deed ever committed by any president. I guess I'm forgetting about the illegal treasonous actions that have gotten almost 3,000 of America's sons and daughters killed in Iraq. I must be, I don't know, either forgetting about it or imagining it or I don't know what all. Bear in mind, this little snippet you're listening to, as well as the next one, going back a little bit, this is before the election, even before Ted Haggard and his, and Ted Haggard flubbing his dub. I'm surprised no one in the progressive media picked up on that. Flubbing his dub. That would be the perfect double entendre for various things that Teddy Haggard was doing. But in the meantime, here's Dobson talking about Foley.
Let me remind you, sir, that it was not just James Dobson who found the Lewinsky affair reprehensible. More than 140 newspapers called for Clinton's resignation, but the president didn't do what Mr. Foley has done in leaving. He stayed in office, and he lied to the grand jury to obscure the facts. As it turns out, Mr. Foley has had illicit sex with no one that we know of, and the whole thing turned out to be what some people are now saying was a sort of a joke by the boy and some of the other pages.
That was October 6th. Now, October 11th.
But let me get to the way this situation is now being spun. There is a blog called Media Matters for America, and it says Dobson and Hininger claiming Foley scandal is sort of a joke and a prank by Pages. That story didn't come from me, but it sounds like I believe it. It sounds like I don't think that this was an immoral act. It sounds like I thought the whole thing was a joke. Now, that's the theme, and it is picked up by different media entities. One of the most widely read is the Huffington Post. These folks can always be counted on to give the most extreme liberal interpretation of everything. Here's their headline: Radical Rights Dobson calls Foley's lurid messages a joke. Now that's a lie!
Is it? What you just heard was October 11th. Let's go back to October 6th.
Mr. Foley has had illicit sex with no one that we know of, and the whole thing turned out to be what some people are now saying was a sort of a joke by the boy and some of the other pages.
Notice the kind of the on-the-fly spin he put into that statement, again from October 6th. He started off declaratory. The whole thing turned out to be, he's saying that's it. And then in the middle, he tries to ascribe what he's saying to other people. Let's listen again.
Mr. Foley has had illicit sex with no one that we know of, and the whole thing turned out to be what some people are now saying was a sort of a joke by the boy and some of the other pages.
See, he's both doing a declaration and doing the Fox News thing. Declaratory, some say. Declaratory, some say. Now, let's see what he was saying. Go back to what he was saying on the 11th, 5 days later.
The Huffington Post. These folks can always be counted on to give the most extreme liberal interpretation of everything. Here's their headline: Radical Rights Dobson calls Foley's lurid messages a joke. Now that's a lie. I mean, you just heard it.
Well, it is. And as I say, that the other things you said does not fit. And that's amazing to hear you even criticized as a radical right.
Okay, he's radical wrong. Does that make you feel better? But the substance of this, he's backing out, lying about what he said. Although, remember, there's that little Fox question type spin in there. He made the declaration about it being a joke, yet within it, one level down, ascribed it to some say. That's, you know, the Sean Hannity type question. Well, some people say blah 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 blah. See, that's the right-wing conservative fake question, the fake opinion, the fake anything, some say. Which is not to say that there weren't some people saying that. But he's having it he had it both ways with what he said. Now he's coming back and saying everybody was lying about what he said. Well, that's bullshit. That is absolute bullshit. Let's listen to the rest of the arbiter of all that is masculine, arbiter of all that is feminine, all that is proper, all that should be proper about the femble.
They do that primarily because of our stand on marriage. The historic definition of marriage is one man and one woman, and that, in that, we are in agreement with 70% of the population of this country, yet they feel free to say that's the radical right. If that's the case, there is a whole lot of radical right in this country, 70%.
One of the most far leftist reporters or talk show hosts or news people on cable television is a man named Keith Olbermann. He's another one who can always be counted on to give the leftist slant on everything. Let's hear his actual words about this issue that I just described.
James Dobson, founder of the religious group Focus on the Family, suggesting that, quote, the whole thing turned out to be what some people are now saying was a sort of a joke by the boy and some of the other pages.
Well, there it is again, Tom, and it's all over the internet.
Yeah, like right here.
The whole thing turned out to be what some people are now saying was a sort of a joke by the boy and some of the other pages.
The whole thing turned out to be what some people are now saying was a sort of a joke by the boy and some of the other pages.
And I just want to set the record straight. What do you think they're trying to do with this?
Well, I know exactly what they're trying to do. They're trying to depress our constituents from going to the polls on Election Day by saying, look, it's all corrupt. The Republican leadership is corrupt. There is no use even bothering going to the polls. Even Dr. Dobson is a hypocrite because he's dismissed this as a joke, and he's protecting the Republican Party, none of which you are doing.
Notice how suddenly they just shifted away from that? Notice how they don't admit that Olbermann was quoting him word for word in context? Granted, it probably would be possible to take that out of context, but remember, there's that little Fox question spin in there. That is in context. Olbermann was quoting him word for word. And then what did they do? They shifted right to, well, they're just trying to change the issue. No. I think it's you guys who were trying to change the issue. And that thing you said where Dobson is trying to do no such thing, that kind of is exactly what he was trying to do. We all know what you really are and what you're really doing.
We are merely calling them on their game, which is to try to keep our people from voting on Election Day.
Again, radical, right-wing, religionist, Christianist psychopaths confronted with irrefutable proof that everything people were saying about them were true. Direct quote, in context, would Jesus wear a Rolex on his television show? Probably not. James Dobson? Don't know if he does. But if so, that's probably the least evil thing that he's done in his life. Dobson, Focus on the Family, sick shit. A sickness that the country would be better off without. And it's not a religion. It isn't. It is a front for theocracy, which is political. This can be dealt with constitutionally, and it should be. And more importantly, Keith Olbermann should sue the son of a bitch for defamation. speaking of someone who was probably more of a direct inspiration for that Ray Stevens song. And by the way, you know, for younger folks who aren't as familiar with, you know, Ray Stevens, you know, known mostly for country parody songs, some of which aren't exactly politically correct. I mean, his first big hit was Ahab the Arab, saying it as he did it in the song. Not, you know, not the most politically correct thing in the world. You know, but he's also not the most liberal person in the world either. He was inspired to do that song almost 20 years ago by...
The news is the Republicans have formed a circular firing squad, and they're firing away. It's just insane, this atavistic spirit to find blame just before an election. They'd be better to say, well, this man's gay, he does what gay people do, and so don't worry about it. I don't know what else to do. All they can say, we abhor this kind of conduct, but it's one person. And certainly the Christian people, the church people, understand forgiveness. They understand sin. And this isn't going to, quote, turn off a lot of voters because of that. But the more they make out of it and the more they begin to have recriminations, the worse it's going to be for them, it seems like to me. But anyhow, I don't run the congressional leadership in Washington. They have their own agenda.
One thing I do want to mention, back when we were listening to the bullshit from Dobson, in addition to Keith Olbermann, he slammed Media Matters, which actually is where I picked up these clips from. A lot of the clips I use on my show, I get myself either from, you know, various TV and radio stations' websites, or, you know, directly off of C-SPAN or other things that I find. But a good repository for specifically political stuff. Occasionally, you know, when the politics deals with GLB or T stuff, you know, you can get the stuff there. But just general political stuff, de-spinning the ruling junta's spin on everything, MediaMatters.org. Really, really great website, which, if you ever watch the O'Reilly Factor, I mean, he hates it. All of the right-wing nutcases hate it because they take everything, most everything, not every last syllable. Some syllables aren't particularly noteworthy. But they take the spin and put it in context. They take the shit and they sift it. They deconstruct it. Radical, right-wing, religionist, Christianists can't handle that because they've survived. Their world has been built on 20 years of uncontested lies. More than 20 years, really. But you can pretty much date it to the advent of Rush Limbaugh's show. It's almost 20 years. Pretty much uncontested lies. And of course, one of their lies is that there's a liberal media. Bullshit. It's almost all owned by Clear Channel. The rest of it, owned by James Dobson. Where's the liberal media? There ain't one. Look at what's happening to some of the Air America stations. The Air America station, the progressive station in Madison, Wisconsin, was the number one show in its format. Probably not number one in the entire city, but number one talk news talk station. Suddenly, its owners decided to shift it to a local sports format. This was right after the election. Yeah. One other little snippet from that I got off of the Media Matters website regarding the Foley affair, and I'll get into the Haggard stuff a little bit. Again, if you're tuning into this, realizing that, you know, this is like a month after the election, which is almost 2 months after the Foley thing, I kind of got bogged down with my own junk this fall, and I'm a little bit behind, but I'm going to catch up, and you'll definitely get my takes on a lot of what was going on up to the election, during it, right afterward, how basically the right-wing anti-constitutionist people are already trying to destroy Nancy Pelosi, granted, isn't the political panacea that probably the country needs, but still, a lie is a lie. And speaking of lies,
it has been known for many years that Congressman Foley was a homosexual.
Okay, to be fair, that part of it isn't the lie.
Homosexuals tend to be preoccupied with sex. The idea that he should be continued, or should have been continued, as chairman of the Committee on Missing and Exploited Children is, you know, given their knowledge of that, is just outrageous.
Now, before we go on, I think I can say, Mr. Ryrick, that there are quite a few people who would take exception to the statement that homosexuals are preoccupied with sex.
Well, I don't care whether they take exception to it. It happens to be true.
Music with old Joe Bones. Duval Street was rocking. My eyes, they started popping, because there she sat at the corner of the bar as I broke another string on my old guitar. Someone call a cab. Lady, won't you pay my tab? And now my head hurts, my feet stink, and I don't love Jesus. It's that kind of morning, really was that kind of night. Trying to tell myself that my condition is improving, and if I don't die by Thursday, I'll be roaring Friday night. Got to get a little orange juice and a Darvon for my head. I can't spend all day, baby, laying in the bed. I'm going down to Fausto's, get some chocolate milk. Can't spend my life in your seats of silk. I've got to find my way. That my condition is improving, and if I don't die by Thursday, I'll be roaring Friday night. Let me tell you, be roaring Friday night. I mean, I'll be roaring Friday night.
Okay, we're almost to the end, and if you're wondering what that is running under under my voice, thought instead of using the usual recording I have, namely my dog snoring, I thought I'd, since I've dealt with a lot of stuff that's older, before the election, I thought I'd deal with something that happened just a couple of days ago, namely the Canadian Parliament voting down a proposal to revisit the gay marriage issue up there, and there was debate on it earlier, but the roll call was just kind of boring, a lot of, you know, parliamentary rah-rahing, cheering, but it, for some reason, it just sounds a hell of a lot more interesting when I speed it up like this. So enjoy it, even though it's pretty much running underneath the voice. Thank you so much for tuning in. And the podcast version of this, getting going a little bit more smoothly. It's up on Pod-O-Matic, and I think it's on iTunes as well. But I'm still running in time slot on Trans FM. Thank you to Ethan for running it. Also, thank you for putting it up on the podcasting stuff, and thank you everybody for tuning in. As always, it is really, really gratifying that people tune in and listen to what I have to say, even when I'm basically giving the entire Canadian Parliament helium. underneath what I'm talking about right now. So tune in at some point in the future, and I'll get back up to date with political commentary, trans and otherwise. Thanks for tuning in. I'm Katrina Rose, and you are tuned in to the Trans FM Radio Network.